next speaker will be Kelly Cash, right, and Abby Wick from North Dakota State University, and screening soil health test and their interpretation. Another good talk, I expect. Thank you, start.
We certainly have a theme going on here. So I arrived at North Dakota State University a little over a year ago, and I'm a research faculty member in soil health, and my extension counterpart, Abby Wick, does a lot of outreach with the farmers. Specifically, our jobs are specifically targeted at soil health. And I think the day that I arrived, maybe even before the day I arrived, I started getting questions about these commercial tests and which ones do we need to use and how do we interpret them. And so this was one of the very first projects that we decided to do, just start screening some of these commercial tests at an experimental farm. We started at our soil health agriculture research and extension farm, which is a demonstration and experimental site located in Morton, North Dakota, which is that far southeast corner of the state. And so this is a quarter section, so about 160 acres. And it's a site to just explore how soil responds to full-scale management practices. You can see from this electrical conductivity map that we have a salinity gradient, so that's a very common problem in our area and sort of the motivation, one of the motivations behind getting the share farm going. The soils here are very fine, so they're plotted here on the textural triangle, 40 to 50% clay, and it's very flat. So combination of all of those factors create some drainage challenges for the producers in this area, and water management is an issue. So the typical management approach for dealing with that is to work the soil a lot in the fall and then again in the spring to keep it black and dry it out and warm it up so that they can get in their planting as soon as possible, because we already have a short growing season up north. So that's sort of the status quo in the area. So in 2014, they wanted to assess tile drainage in terms of helping with the salinity management, but also, you know, the water management issues. And so they tiled the north half of the field. In 2015, colleagues Aaron Day and Jody DeYoung-Hughes out of Minnesota put in some tillage plots. And so I'm showing here these brown strips are just like the conventional chisel strips across the field over the tiled and untiled ground. And then that's also they're looking at vertical and strip till, which are not shown here, and they're doing all kinds of work on those plots. In 2016, the share farm was enrolled in the Soil Health Partnership, the National Corn Growers Association network of 100 farms across the Midwest that are monitoring soil health in response to management practices, specifically tillage and cover crop and organic amendment related, just to promote soil health. So that was the first year that the rest of the field, so outside of those tillage plots, the rest of the field was transitioning into a no-till system. And then we interseeded the cover crops into the corn mid-season. We used the cereal rye and radish that year. And so that was kind of baseline year one. So then when I arrived, I should mention that the Soil Health Partnership was just on this eastern non-saline side of the field. So then when I arrived, I thought, well, let's take a look at those same kind of soil health properties because we're interested in salinity as well. That's a big issue for us, though. So we decided to go from 42 sample locations up to 84 across this entire field. And so then this year, the cash crop was soybean, and we again aerially seeded cover crops mid-season, except in the tillage plots. So we've already kind of been exposed today to some of these tests. We conducted across all those sample points the Cornell test, the Haney test, standard fertility test, looking at yield and cover crop productivity and nutrient content. And then I decided that those weren't enough properties to measure at 84 points. So this year we added a couple other properties that were just interesting because farmers were bringing them up. They were things that farmers were noticing and talking about when we would visit with them. And then other properties that we'd measured in research just because we wanted that sort of comparison with something that we knew. And I was really particularly interested in these biological indicators, right, because we have a pretty good handle on the soil physical and chemical properties and how to interpret them, but these biological ones are really the tough ones. So I'll be presenting the same kind of data that we've already seen today. So we got our Cornell tests back on year one. So again, this was before really any treatment effects when we compared sort of tillage versus no-till and cover crop. So we didn't really expect any treatment differences. This is just baseline for the field. What do we have? And so our across the board, our Cornell tests were telling us that our biological indicators were pretty poor. That wasn't necessarily a big surprise to us. But we were surprised that our overall score for across the field was actually rated as excellent. And we had seen a lot of soils in our area. This field in particular has a long history of cultivation. And we were thinking that it had a long way to go before it was we would consider it in excellent condition, just based on our observations. So I started looking into these scoring functions that the Cornell test uses. And this is just an example with organic matter. Our soils, the mean at the Share Farm is this black bar, 5%, after a long time of degradation. So all these soils have much higher potential for organic matter, and even after its history, you know, we're maxing out these scoring functions. So I've been telling people that I like the Cornell test, but I really think that they should focus on just the raw, the direct values rather than, so this is just a local calibration scoring issue. And then for 2006, our Haney soil health test, we really didn't know what to expect for these values or have a frame of reference, so honestly, we just kind of filed them away and waited until we had something to compare them to in the next year. But we rated a 22 out of 50 on the Haney test. So just showing you some of the data, aggregate stability and organic matter, same kind of story. So we have our no-till cover crop points, and then our conventional or chisel plow strips. And we didn't see significant differences between those treatments, and like I said, that's not a surprise early on in this project. But we did see a statistically significant difference from in a reduction in organic matter and aggregate stability just in those conventional till plots. I don't know if that's a sign that these plots are already diverging or if we just are capturing some kind of local variability. I'm not convinced that we're seeing an effect in those properties this quickly. So looking at some of the labile carbon and nitrogen pools, the protein index and our four-day respiration, both provided by the Cornell test, no significant differences between treatments, but we did see lower values in the second year. So they went down. Active carbon, really no difference across the board, across treatments, years, pretty equivalent. And then our Haney results, so the burst test, water extractable organic carbon and nitrogen. Again, no differences in treatments, but then compared from, all of our values decreased from 2016 to 2017. So I think what this is actually reflecting, so I'm not convinced that we're actually seeing treatment effects yet. That takes time. We know that it will, and we'll be monitoring these properties over time as these practices are in place longer. But what I do think we're seeing is a rotation effect here. So these samples were taken in the spring prior to planting, and so in 2016 it would have been corn, prior to corn planting following a soybean crop, and then in 17 it would have been prior to planting soybean following a corn crop. And so I think some of these labile carbon and nitrogen pools are just sort of residual or carryover from the previous soybean crop, and that's really what's showing up in these data so far. Just a couple things about the plant productivity. 2016, we did have a statistically significant reduction in corn yield by about 13 bushels per acre. We'll see if this trend holds this year with soybeans. My technician was just out there last week slaving away, cutting soybeans, and I think the field's getting harvested today, so we didn't have that data yet to present. But we did go out mid-season. We were just kind of curious to look at nodulation, and we excavated soybean plants and counted nodules and then weighed the plants dry. And this is maybe perhaps a little bit misleading, but so this is the number of nodules per gram of dry weight, and we saw lower nodules per gram in the conventional plots, but those plants were actually bigger. So the conventional soybeans were bigger than the no-till soybeans, and we'll just see how that plays out in the yield. I don't know if it's even worth monitoring in the future, but we were kind of curious to just see what happened there. So a couple of the indicators that we added this year that the farmers really like, that they talk to us a lot about. They're always on the lookout for earthworms. And so we went to every single one of those 84 points this year and looked for live worms just in a spadeful, and then also looked for casts on the surface. And in the interior of the field, we found zero sign, no earthworms, no surprises, again, because of the tilled history of this field. But at all of these red dots on the perennial grassy margins, we did see earthworms and activity. So we're going to be monitoring this over time, hoping for migration. We have a source nearby and sort of see if that's a good indicator of the field kind of healing, you know, as the earthworms move in. And then the other thing that I did at most of my research sites this summer is include litter bags. So just little packets of residue. In the case of the share farm, we used corn residue since that was last year's crop. And so we had them on the surface and then also buried, I think, about 4 inches deep. And so we put those at 84 points, and then at a subset of 24 of those locations, we had other kinds of residue, alfalfa and also cereal rye. And so those are still buried. So we take our fall soil samples, but I like the idea of a biological indicator that's integrating over the course of the season and the crop, and rather than just a snapshot in time. And so that's the goal with this. And I think it's something that the farmers could really like. They're really getting on board with the buried undies test or cotton test, if you've seen any of that. I can tell you about that later. But it's a good visual test, and also something that I think really makes sense to them, especially when they're thinking about residue management on their fields. So just sort of my last little kind of maybe not so data-rich slide, but more of a philosophical point. So last year we also just put out dust collectors, erosion monitors, on the share farm and then on a field, a neighboring field that was open all winter. And we had about, over the course of the winter, we had about three times the soil movement in our open field as compared to what was on the share farm. We have an alarming amount of soil movement in the wind in North Dakota. And this is not necessarily something that a soil health test is going to detect until it's far too late. And I think we know how to prevent this, and we know what causes it. And so I've been, you know, I'm very curious about these soil health tests and where they're going, what we can learn from them. But I've been kind of encouraging all of us to take sort of a step back and remember the bigger picture about and take advantage of what we know about soil quality and preserving soil and conservation. So I have to thank the cooperating farmer, Ken Johnson. He's been a really great cooperator for the share farm, as well as our excellent technical staff at NDSU. We're very fortunate. And then all of our supporters and organizations that have supported the research at the share farm. Thank you for your attention.
She finished within 12 minutes.
Faster so than
you can bombard her with questions.
I'm sure I forgot to say half of what I wanted.
Oh, you did excellent. Any questions for her?
You mentioned you have a partner in extension.
Yes.
Can you tell me what more role she's playing in that?
Yeah, so Abby has been at NDSU for close to 5 years, and her position is 90% extension, 10% research. I'm 90% research, 10% teaching. So we work very closely together. I kind of lead the research, the studies, and then I provide her the information, and she also gathers it from others in our department and school. She has an incredible ability to build relationships with farmers. What she's been able to accomplish communicating and educating farmers in our region has been kind of unheard of, and the interest in soil health and also the aptitude of the farmers in these topics. You wouldn't believe some of the questions they're asking me about biology. They're more advanced than my students in class. So she works very hard. She's rarely in the office because she's always out interacting with the farmers with a shovel, showing them worms and aggregation. And she's also been a social media queen. You can find her pretty much on TV, on Twitter. So she's really working hard to get the message out. And I think that model has worked really well for North Dakota.
Thank you.
So, based on your observation, do you think the soil health is changing, or because in your measurements it didn't show up at all? Does it make a difference to use no-till?
I think that it's a little early to tell. When I'm out in that field walking around, I feel like we're starting to see some better soil structure in our no-till areas, especially when the cover crop is active and living. But I don't think that we're building the stable aggregates. That's one of the number one things that we want to see out there. And that's just because it takes time, and I don't know how long it will take, but that's what we're interested in. I do think we'll see differences given a little bit more time. Mm-hmm.
What's your preferred, or maybe your extension person's preferred method of demonstrating aggregates to the growers?
She just crumbles it in her hand, honestly. So that brings up a good point. So a lot of it's just visual and tactile. But we are this fall going to be taking a number of soil samples specifically to compare aggregation methods. So we had the numbers that I presented are from the Cornell test with the sprinkler infiltrometer. We're going to be doing some wet sieving as well as some method that's adapted from rangeland health assessment where it's kind of a visual. It's just like in a little cup with a, it's more of a visual assessment. Yeah. That's another thing that we will collect this fall, begrudgingly, my technicians will help me. But yes.
I know it's excitement.
Yeah. Yeah, and we talked about that. This field has certainly had some battles with compaction, and actually I didn't talk about the tile, but this was the first spring that we actually saw the north half drain a little bit better, and the soybeans are actually ready to be harvested now in the north part of the field, and they're not in the south, so... But it took a few years of breaking up that compaction layer.
Mm-hmm. I don't have a question, but I have a suggestion. The active carbon test that you all need, this clay soil has hard time when we developed. It's one of me who developed this test. So we didn't use heavy soil like Indiana or Illinois type soil at the beginning. Well, you may have to use the new test. You revise the test for all kinds of soil.
That's a great idea.
Then you will find some difference.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.